Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Vince, it's wonderful.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Drive-In, where we don't mind if you throw jujubes at the screen. Hell, it's your screen. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Ray Bigley Weirdness from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And unless I missed my cue there, I think it's all we're presently in accounted or right now, or something like that.
I don't know what you mean. There's two of us missing. You and I are accounted for.
We are accounted for. And that's it.
And, but good old Bob and Fogsbane are here. That's cool. It's the Vincent Price weekend. Double feature.
Yep. Yeah, it's the second feature tonight.
Yeah, last night our first part was Dragon Wick with Vincent Price, and the Master of Horror is in tonight's epic story, Laura. And I was sharing...
And this is a movie... I'm looking over the notes for this, Dale, and it's unbelievable that this movie was ever made. Between the infighting and the producers and the directors and everything else, it is absolutely amazed that this ever happened, and yet it is.
You told me Preminger wasn't getting along with Clifton Webb.
Well, it wasn't his choice. He ended up kind of being stuck with him because what it is Caspary, who wrote the book Laura, she had eventually adapted it for both the novel, adapted the play for both the novel and the movie. They were both purchased by 20th Century Fox for $30,000. Fox announced George Sanders and Laird Krieger as the leads. Now, interim studio host William Goetz in that capacitor while Daryl F. Zanuck was fulfilling his military duty, of course, during World War II here when so many people went ahead and did serve a certain amount of time anyway. And he's assigning Preminger to the task of developing the book for the screen. Preminger began working with three different writers, recalling differences opinion Caspary had. Preminger opted not to involve her until the first draft was completed. And sensing more than existing character was not Laura, but Waldo Lydecker, and explained his role accordingly. Caspary was unhappy with the plot changes, though. Now, Zanuck, with whom Preminger previously had clashed, returned to the studio and was angered by discovering that Goetz had hired Preminger. In retaliation, he announced that Preminger could produce Lore, but not direct it, and assigned it in the helm to meantime during in the mean Darling instead. Now, several directors, including Louis Milestone, were offered but rejected Laura until Ruben Mamelin finally agreed to the direct. Mamelin immediately ignored all of Preminger's directives as producer and began to rewrite the script. To Preminger's dismay, he cast Laird Krieger, is known for his portrayal of Jack the Ripper in The Lodger, in the key role of Lydecker. The producer felt casting an actor with that reputation for playing sinister roles would lead the audience to become suspicious of Lydecker earlier than necessary. He favored Clifton Webb, a noted Broadway actor who had not appeared before on the camera since 1930 and who was at the time performing in Noel Coward play Blythe the Spirit in Los Angeles. You know what? I don't know if you want to go ahead and get started with this, but there's more.
Go ahead. I'm intrigued because, as I shared with Dave, I've only seen it for the first time, like maybe within the last 3 or 4 years. And I was just intrigued as how to the story developed. So despite all this strife, the output was really, really good.
It was amazing. Now, remember, Vincent Price's name or Dana Andrews or Gene Tierney, none of these names have come up yet, right? Okay, so Fox casting director Rufus Lemire and Zanuck both objected to Webb because of his effeminate mannerisms, which were exactly what you felt suited the character. Preminger filmed the actor delivering the monologue from the Coward play, and Zanuck agreed Webb would be perfect for the role. Zanuck was similarly campaigned for actor Reginald Gardner to play the role of Shelby, though Fox contractee Vincent Price finally got the role. First time his name came up. Filming began April 27th of 44, and from the start, Mamelin had problems with his cast. He offered the relative newcomers, Gene Tierney and Dana Andrews, little support, allowing theatrically trained Judith Anderson to play to the balcony instead of reigning in her performance, and virtually ignored Webb, who had learned that the director was unhappy with his casting. After viewing the early rushes, Zanuck called a meeting with Mamelin and Preminger, each of whom blamed each other for the problems on the set. Preminger finally convinced Zanuck that the material needed more subtle approach than Mamelin was willing to give it, and the defeated studio head, in frustration, reluctantly allowed Preminger to dismiss Mamelin as the director and direct it himself. Preminger immediately hired a new cinematographer and scenic designer and replaced the portrait of Laura, a crucial element of the film. Mamelin's wife, Zayden, had painted the original portrait, but Preminger replaced it with an enlarged photograph taken by Fox photographer Frank Polney of Tierney, lightly dabbed with oils to give it an ethereal effect that he wanted. And Preminger initially experienced resistance from his cast, who had believed that Preminger was unhappy with their work by the departing Mamelin. Once we got used to Otto, it was a pretty easy time, Vincent Price recalled in a 1989 interview. Filming was completed June 29th, slightly over budget, but within projected timeline. Zanuck was unhappy with Preminger's first cut of the film and insisted it be given a new ending, which it was revealed Lidecker had imagined the entire story. But following the screening, Zanuck's version columnist Walter Winchell approached the studio head and told him, "I didn't get the ending. You got to change it." Having lost again, Zanuck relented to allowing Preminger to reinstate the original finale, telling him, "This is your success, I concede." There you go.
There you go. And maybe that's why it came out so good.
And that's not the only problem that came up on the set. Part of it was the music, but we'll cover that at another point in the show.
Sure. After the first break, we might as well go ahead and get started with this Lux Radio Theater version of Laura with largely the original cast.
Yes, and maybe Gail Gordon. You never know.
And maybe Gail Gordon. He snuck in on us yesterday, little devil. Here's part one, originally broadcast way back.
February 5th of 1945.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Laura, starring Dana Andrews, Gene Tierney, Vincent Price, and Otto Kruger. Ladies and gentlemen, your guest producer, Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if there is one form of entertainment we Americans are singularly partial to, it's the mystery or detective story, popularly known as the whodunit. One out of every four new works of fiction published in this country is a mystery or detective story. Some 300 new books of this sort appear each year. Needless to say, you couldn't read all of them if you tried. But tonight, we're bringing you one of the most intriguing mysteries of recent years, the current 20th century Fox hit, Laura. Our stars are Gene Tierney, who is just completing A Bell for Adorno at 20th Century Fox, Dana Andrews, and Vincent Price, all three in their original screen roles. Also, the ever-versatile Otto Kubler. Now, I think one of the reasons mystery stories are so popular, especially in troubled times like these, is that they satisfy our sense of order. They take a troublesome and seemingly hopeless situation, and they put everything to rights, simply by the use of human intelligence and sensible methods. Of course, you could say the same about lots of things. Lux Flakes, for instance. They take those troublesome problems of how to wash fine fabric safely so they'll wear longer and look better, and they give a quick and very satisfactory solution, especially in these difficult times when it's important to take care of what we have. It's little wonder Lux Flakes are so popular. Well, now it's curtain time, and here's Act One of Laura, starring Dana Andrews as Mark McPherson, Gene Tierney as Laura, Vincent Price as Shelby Carpenter, and Otto Kruger as Paul Leidecker. Now, most people who read a newspaper or listen to the radio know the name Paul Leidecker. Mr. Leidecker is a legendary oracle of barbed wire and forget-me-not, whose enchanted pen and acid tongue have brought fame to hundreds and oblivion to just as many. His New York apartment is a combination art gallery and Roman bath. And now, immersed in one of his marble pools, Mr. Leidecker has a visitor, Detective Lieutenant Mark McPherson of the Homicide Bureau.
Be careful, will you? That stuff is priceless.
Oh. Mr. Leidecker? Quite an art collection in there.
Those pieces you are pawing over are irreplaceable.
Nice little place you have.
It's lavish. I call it home. You'll hear about the murder of Laura Hunt. I made my statement yesterday to Sergeant Detective Crane.
I know.
Told him what I know. Now suppose you tell me what you know.
Why not?
Hand me that washcloth, Mr.
McPherson.
How good a detective are you?
I've picked up a few facts. Laura Hunt was killed the night before last. A bell rang, she opened the door, and someone pulled the trigger of a shotgun. It wasn't night. The rain was close.
Have you found the shotgun?
No.
What else?
The thought comes to me, Mr. Leidecker, who's questioning who?
May I remind you that you're a guest in my home?
Yeah, that's right. What else, huh? Well, Miss Hunt was a very good-looking girl, probably. About 25, lived in a swell apartment, had a maid named Bessie.
And where did she get the wherewithal to support such a menage?
Bullet Company, advertising agency. She had a good job, art director or something.
Not or something.
She has a lady cousin in town and a couple of boyfriends. One named Shelby Carpenter and the other is Paul Leidecker.
Hmm. Today is Sunday. Why haven't you tried to see me?
Because it's a peculiar case and I wanted to think.
Hmm. If you'll wait, I'll go with you when you leave.
Why?
Murder's my favorite crime. My radio audience loves it. I know you'll visit all your suspects, and I'd like to study their reaction.
You're on the list yourself, you know.
Be insulted if I weren't.
Were you in love with Laura Hunt, Mr. Leidecker? Was she in love with you?
Laura considered me the wisest, the wittiest, the most interesting man she'd ever met. I was in complete accord with her on that point. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll get dressed. Where shall we be stopping first, Lieutenant?
I'd like to see Laura Hunt's cousin.
Mrs. Ann Treadwell, yes, of course.
So I'd like to ask a few questions, Mrs. Treadwell.
I'll do anything I can to help. Oh, good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Ann.
You were fond of your cousin, Mrs. Treadwell?
I adored Laura. Paul can tell you.
Yeah, I can tell you considerable.
Did you approve of Miss Hunt's coming marriage to Mr. Carpenter?
Why shouldn't I approve?
I don't know. Just what does Shelby Carpenter mean to you, Mrs. Treadwell?
To me?
Well, he comes here regularly. Is he a friend, acquaintance? Or are you in love with him?
Well, this is beginning to assume fabulous aspects.
What are you driving at?
The truth. Are you in love with him?
Why, no. I'm very fond of Shelby, of course. Everybody is.
I despise him.
You've been withdrawing a lot of cash from your bank, Mrs. Treadwell. $1,500 at a clip. $1,700...
I needed that money.
Mm-hmm. The day you took out $1,500, Carpenter deposited $1,350. When you withdrew $17, he deposited $15.
In shooting crap, Sam?
Oh, must I be insulted like this? Shelby needed some money. I lent it to him. I suppose I could do with it as I please.
Sure, sure. Now, on Friday night, you were home alone. Why didn't you go to the concert with Mr. Carpenter?
Concert? Why, I didn't go because he didn't ask me.
Well, hello.
Oh, just talking about you, Carpenter. What a coincidence to find you here.
This is Lieutenant McPherson.
Yes, we've met.
I didn't know you were here, Mr. Carpenter.
I've been lying down. My hotel room is so hot, and then all the reporters and the telephone. You know how it is, Lieutenant. I've hardly slept a wink since it happened.
Is that a sign of guilt or innocence, McPherson?
I'm as eager to find the murderer as you are, Lieutenant. Laura and I were going to be married this week, you know.
No, he doesn't know, and neither do I, nor you, nor anyone else.
Oh?
Laura had not definitely made up her mind to marry him. She told me so herself. She was going to the country to think it over. Laura was extremely kind, but she'd never have thrown her life away on a male beauty in distress.
I suppose you've heard losers whine before, eh, Lieutenant?
Yesterday, you said you went to that concert Friday night, Mr. Carpenter. What did they play?
Oh, some Brahms and Beethoven's Ninth.
Mm-hmm. Well, this place Miss Hunt had in the country, have you got a key to it?
No, but I think there's one in her apartment.
Well, I'll have a look.
And perhaps I could help you?
Okay, come along.
Goodbye, Mrs. Treadwell.
You can start looking for that key now, Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, yes, yes. I'll try the bell. Excuse me.
That's the dame's portrait on the wall, isn't it?
Will you stop calling Laura a dame? Look at the furnishings. Would you call this the home of a dame? Look at the portrait.
I am. Not bad.
It was painted by Joseph Carter. He was in love with her then. Have you ever been in love, McPherson?
A doll in Washington Heights once got a fox fur out of me.
Have you ever known a woman who wasn't a doll or a dame?
Yeah, one, but she kept walking me past furniture stores.
Where are you going?
Phonograph has a record on here. Selections from Bittersweet.
One of Laura's favorites. Not exactly classical, but very nice.
You know a lot about music?
I don't know a lot about anything, but I know a little about practically everything.
Then why did you say they played Brahms and Beethoven at that concert? They played nothing but Sibelius.
Did they? Well, to be perfectly honest, I fell asleep and I didn't hear a note. Oh, I know it sounds phony, but I'm just a natural-born suspect. You see, I'm not the conventional type.
Don't worry, I fall asleep at concerts myself. Find that key?
No, maybe it's in here, in her desk. Yes, it is. I knew there must be one around somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, the police looked in that desk drawer yesterday and the drawer was empty.
You had the key right along, didn't you, Carpenter?
Yes. I didn't want to give it to you while Lydecker was present. I have private reasons that don't concern him.
You have private reasons, no doubt, to lie about that key.
Paul, I'm warning you to stop implying I had anything to do with Laura's death.
Very well, I'll stop implying. I'll make a direct statement.
You asked for this, Paul.
Get out, the two of you. Okay, we came here to find the key, and I've got the key. Now, let's get out.
There's nothing more you want from me?
No, not now.
I'll run along, then.
You having lunch, Lieutenant?
I guess so.
There's rather a superior restaurant nearby.
Okay, let's go. Nice, quiet little place, Mr. Lydecker.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
You wouldn't call me a sentimental person, would you, Lieutenant?
Well, I...
Dozens of times we sat here at this very table, Laura and I.
How long did you know her?
Nearly 5 years. I was just thinking, we were eating lunch, and it was at lunch that I first met Laura. The Algonquin Hotel. I was alone. I looked up and I found her standing in front of me. She had a layout in her hand. Sample and question.
Lydecker, how do you do? I'm Laura Hunt.
Well?
I'd like to talk something over with you, if I may.
I am eating my lunch.
Yes, but it's practically impossible to get to see you, and I...
Either you're from some incredibly remote community where good manners are unknown, or you suffer from a common delusion that being a female exempts you from all the rules of civilized conduct.
Possibly, but I wanted to show this to you. It's an ad for the Wallace Slow Write Pen. You're such a famous writer and commentator. It would be tremendously helpful if you'd endorse what we say about the Slow-Write pen.
I don't use a pen. I write with a goose quill dipped in poison. And you may tell your employers that...
Oh,
I'm
they don't know anything about this. It was all my idea. They'd give anything to get your endorsement. And if I were the person getting it, why...
You disregard completely something far more important to me than your career.
Oh?
My food.
You mean that, don't you?
Well, of course I mean.
I never heard of anything so selfish.
In my case, self-absorption is completely justified. I have never discovered any subject quite so worthy of my attention.
But in your column, on the radio, the things you say, they're filled with such understanding, such sentiment.
Miss Hunt, you are beginning to bore me.
You're a poor man, Mr. Lydecker. I feel very sorry for you. Goodbye.
Hunt occurred about 2 hours later.
Kept after you, did she?
No, I went to her because I couldn't stop thinking about her. I was more than slightly annoyed, but she had something, that girl. Something far deeper than good looks. I went to Bulletin Company, proceeded to do something I have carefully avoided since the age of 2. I apologized. Laura looked at me. She smiled.
Your apology is accepted, Mr. Lydecker. It was very nice of you to go to all this trouble. Goodbye.
In a moment, Miss Hunt. For reasons which are too embarrassing to mention, I'd like to endorse the Wallace Flo-Wright pen. Have you an ad?
You're a very strange man. Now I'm sure you're sorry for the way you acted.
Let's not get psychiatric. But in a word, yes.
And you are a very kind person.
No, I'm vicious. The real secret of all my charm. But if you think me kind, I'll call for you here at 6.
What?
We'll have dinner together. I can't make it any later. Will you be ready?
Why, yes, I'll be ready.
Coffee, Mr. Lydecker?
Thanks. I started then to help Laura. I did everything in the world for her. I am a man reputedly of overwhelming ego, but this I admit without reserve. It was Laura's own talent, her own incredible charm, that enabled her to rise to the top of her profession. Through me, Laura met everyone, famous and the infamous. And deferring always to my taste and judgment, she captivated them all. She became as well known as my walking stick in White Carnation. And like them, she was always with me.
When does Carpenter enter the picture?
Well, men couldn't keep away from Laura, but she never regarded them seriously but me. Her own discrimination ruled them out, and I never had to intercede. She met Carpenter one night at a party at Ann Treadwell's. She became attracted to him instantly. I was shocked. As a fellow completely without talent, with as much depth of character as a saucer of stale gin. Shortly before I took Laura home, I overheard her talking with Carpenter on the terrace.
And so I spend my time doing what I've always done, nothing.
Then tell me, what does it feel like living on the income from an estate?
Oh, I once knew what it felt like, but the sheriff interfered with that over 10 years ago.
Then why don't you work for a living?
Oh, I did ask a friend for a job once. All he did was laugh. He thought I was joking.
Weren't you?
No. When he saw I was sincere, he just got embarrassed. He said he'd phoned me. That was months ago.
Do you really want a job?
Yes, I do.
Then you've got one.
What?
Now you think I'm joking. Well, I'm not. You just be at Bulletin Company tomorrow morning. You're going to work, Mr. Carpenter.
Hey, somebody kicked the projectionist. The movie reel is flapping around and around and around and around and around and around.
Yeah, you know what? These non-union guys, you got to be careful of that.
I tell you, last time we hire a non-union guy, look for the union label.
Union label, yes, there you go.
There are those commercials.
All right,
oh, my
now
goodness.
On to the music. Now on to the music for Laura. One principal photography had been taken. The furniture hired David Raskin to score the film. The director wanted to use Sophisticated Lady by Duke Ellington for the main theme, but Raskin objected to the choice. Alfred Newman, who was not Alfred E. Newman, but who
was
Randy Newman's uncle. He's Randy Newman's uncle, though. He is that. Music director for Fox convinced Preminger to give Raskin a weekend to compose an original tune. Furious, Preminger gave Raskin that weekend, but threatened him with dismissal in case he failed. Oh, here you go. You got to write a hit song in a weekend or else. Inspired by a Dear John letter he received from his wife over the course of that weekend, Raskin composed the haunting theme, also titled Laura, for which Johnny Mercer later wrote lyrics. It eventually became a jazz standard recorded by more than 400 artists, including Stan Kenton, Dick Hames, Woody Herman, Nat King Cole, The Four Freshmen, Charlie Parker, Billy Erskine, and Frank Sinatra.
And I think
even,
Motley Crue did it, too, once.
They may have. Even
what do you think, CW?
CW here? All right. Even there was even recorded by a little unknown group called Spike Jonze and the City Slickers.
I heard of them.
Oh, the City Slickers. Now I'm impressed.
Maybe I know this is in between, but maybe since we brought it up, we should preview the song here. What do you think?
No, I got something better, Dave. I got something better.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It's nice summertime peaceful music, and I think CW, Fogsbane, and good old Bob are going to enjoy this beautiful medley. Very dreamy.
Very nice.
Here in Ohio right now. This is beautiful.
Oh yeah, nice weather for the weekend.
You see, it's so nice and strong. Megadeth, one of the two. I don't know.
Megadeth, yeah. Judas Priest. There you are. Judas Priest.
Now you got it. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
At least the CW. We struggled without you yesterday, but we
I know. I know. I felt so guilty. I did, but I had to get my way with a machete through the jungle and all this thing and whatnot, and dare I say that naughty four-letter word.
Work.
Oh, I'm so sorry, everyone in cyberspace. I apologize for using that harsh language. I know it's hurting your delicate ears, but oh well. But this is Erie House Radio. It gets kind of rough.
It's an endeavor Dave and I are considering saying farewell to in the next few years, which leaves us more time to play.
That's something dangerous.
Even while we're working, we're scheming, guys. We're scheming.
Oh, yeah.
Things. Including an announcement about next weekend, which will be fun. But let's get back to part two of Laura from Lux Radio Theater with Vincent Price on his birthday weekend.
Yes.
And so in time, they got engaged. They became attached to each other very quickly. I concealed my annoyance with masterly self-control, but here was a situation, however ridiculous, that required my attention. As you will see, it was for Laura's own good. Well, I followed them one night to this very restaurant. They had been working late on some advertising campaign.
Tell me the truth, Laura. Will it really make people brush their teeth more often?
The idea is wonderful, Shelby. And so are the layout. By the way, who's the model you used?
You don't remember? Well, you hired her yourself, Diana Redfern.
Oh, of course.
Laura, you look wonderful.
Well, that's a quick switch of subject.
Oh, I like this one much better than toothpaste.
Good.
Could you have dinner with me tomorrow night just like this?
Maybe.
And what about the night after that?
But Shelby, I can't just...
What about 3 weeks from tonight and all the nights in between?
Don't you think I have any other engagement?
What about 2 months from now and the month after that?
And what about next year?
Then it's all settled. What about breakfast? What about lunch? Beautiful lunches, day after day.
And what about beautiful work? Day after day.
Why, Miss Hunt, the way you talk, you'd think I was in love with you.
Sparkling bit of dialogue, wasn't it, Lieutenant McPherson?
If they'd known you were listening, they might have snapped it up a bit.
Laura knew that I had overheard them because I told her so the following evening. By then, I had some other information to tell her also.
I don't care what you found out about Shelby. It's the snooping about, Paul. It's degrading.
Of course, but I thought you'd want to know. That sterling character almost went to jail last year for passing rubber checks. And after that, in Virginia, he was suspected of stealing his hostess's jewelry.
Those are only insinuations. I know his fault, but a man can change, can't he?
Oh, Laura, for heaven's sake, open your eyes. So Carpenter has changed. Yes, he's changed from you to Diana Redfern. Running around with her now. A model from your own office.
Paul, how can you be so despicable? You know what you mean to me. How can you try so deliberately to hurt me?
Hurt you?
Paul, Shelby and I are going to be married next week.
Ah. You gave him a cigarette case on his birthday, didn't you? A valuable case?
Where did you get it?
From the pawn shop where Diana Redfern took it after he gave it to her.
I don't believe it. He probably needed money and was too proud to borrow.
Perhaps that's why this pawn ticket is in her name.
I won't let this go any further. I'm going to telephone him.
You won't find him at his hotel. Tonight, Carpenter's deserted both you and Miss Redfern. He's dining with a young and wealthy widow. Someone you know. Your cousin. He's been treating her rather badly these days.
I'll phone Anne at once.
Really, my dear, you don't think that Anne would give him away, do you? Oh, it's nasty, I know it, but I must make you realize. Now, suppose we visit Cousin Anne,
He won't be there. I know he won't. Oh, good evening, Miss Laura. Good evening, Mr. Lydecker.
Hello, Margaret.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, but Mrs. Treadwell isn't at home. Satisfied, Paul?
Well, suppose we just wait for her.
Oh, please, Mr. Lydecker.
Come in, Laura.
Why, Laura, dear. And Paul, we were just having dinner.
Yes, I know.
Laura, I didn't expect to see you tonight.
There you are, Laura, in a moment of supreme disaster. He's trite.
I was just telling Anne about our getting married. Well, sit down, you two.
Oh, no. No, thanks. I just stopped by to give you this. A cigarette case. You must have misplaced it somewhere.
Laura. Laura, wait a minute.
Good night, Anne. Good night, Shelby.
When was this episode of the cigarette case, Mr. Lydecker?
Last Wednesday night. On Friday, Laura had lunch with a Redfern girl.
I wish I'd been there.
And as I said in my statement, Laura and I were to have had dinner that night. At 7 o'clock, my phone rang. I had a sudden sensation of depression, a foreboding of disaster. Hello?
Paul, I'm frightfully sorry, but I just can't meet you.
Well, there's nothing wrong, Laura. I mean, you're not ill?
Oh, no, no. I, just decided to go to the country for a few days.
What, in this storm? Why, it's pouring.
It won't last, Paul. It will do me a lot of good to be alone.
Oh, you're thinking about Carpenter, huh?
Of course. Please, I simply must have time to think this out for myself.
When will you be back, dear?
I don't know. I'll call before I leave. Maybe you could meet me.
Well, of course I will.
Thank you, Paul. Goodbye.
Goodbye, my dear. That was the last time I ever heard her voice.
This Red Fern girl, where does she live?
In Newark. She's in the phone book. I will never forgive myself for allowing Laura to become involved with Carpenter. That was my fault. I should have stopped it long ago, somehow.
She's dead now. It's too late even to think about it. Well, so long.
Yeah, too late even to think about it. Goodbye, Lieutenant.
Our stars will return with Act Two of Laura in a moment. Now, here's what a young girl said to me the other day.
Mr. Kennedy, why do you always talk as if only housewives wash dishes? Now, I work in an office from 9 to 5:30, but I'm the KP at home. Wash dishes every night for five of us. Oh, Mother cooks the dinner, but I clean up afterwards so she has a chance to talk with Dad and catch up on mending for the kids. And I know a lot of other business girls who do dishes, too.
So I asked her if she knew what dishpan hands were.
You bet I do. For a while, Mother brought home any old kind of soap. Strong chips, granules, bars. Well, sometimes my hands were so red I wanted to wear mitts when I took dictation. So that's why the dishpan test you talk about interested me. Now, you say changing to Lux takes dishpan hands away, and you're right. One day, Mother brought some Lux flakes home, and in just a few days, my hands looked nicer. Soon they were soft and smooth as you please.
Then I said, maybe you're too young to worry about being thrifty. But that's another advantage with Lux. It goes a long way. Ounce per ounce does up to twice as many dishes, we've found, as other leading soaps tested. Then she said...
Well, I can believe that, too. Some of the soaps I used to use didn't dissolve completely and made little gooey lumps in the dishpan. But with Lux, I get such quick and abundant suds. It dissolves so quickly. So I've told Mother to keep on getting Lux if she wants me to keep on washing dishes.
And now, Mr. Barrymore returns to the microphone.
Act Two of Laura, starring Jean Tierney as Laura, Dana Andrews as Mark McPherson, Vincent Price as Shelby Carpenter, and Otto Kruger as Leidiger. It's an hour later. In front of Laura Hunt's apartment, Lieutenant Detective Mark McPherson picks up Sergeant Crane. Together, they make another thorough search of the girl's rooms. Two things interest McPherson. A pile of Laura's letters and a bottle of Scotch whiskey.
If you're thirsty, Lieutenant, I think you can do better than that there.
I'm not thirsty. When did you say that maid was due here?
Any minute now. Say, where's McCavity?
In the basement. I've had the telephone tapped. He's sitting on it.
But who's going to use the phone besides us?
Nobody I know of. Still a good idea. I'm making a call now myself. Go down in the basement and relieve Mac. I'll wait here for the maid. Carpenter's coming, too.
Okay.
Hello. Miss Coneys? This is Lieutenant McPherson, Homicide Bureau. Laura Hunt's been buying liquor from you, hasn't she? Yeah. Did she ever buy a brand of scotch called Black Pony? You sure of that? Okay. Thanks. Oh, come on in, Miss Clary.
Never mind that Miss Clary stuff. My name's Bessie.
Have a chair.
It seems to me you... Those letters belong to her.
Yeah.
You've been reading her private letters.
I said sit down.
Cops. I was brought up to spit whenever I saw one.
Okay, go ahead and spit if that'll make you feel any better.
What do you want to find out?
Who killed Laura Hunt?
How would I know? You think I'd done it? Ask anyone. Anyone who ever came here. Why I'd have worked for her, scrubbed for her, done anything she would have wanted of me. Pay or no pay.
You're loyal, Bessie.
It wasn't only on account of the wonderful things she'd done for me. It was because she was so wonderful herself. Miss Hunt was a real lady. Something cops wouldn't know about.
How'd this bottle get into her cabinet?
I put it there.
It's cheap scotch, Bessie. Laura Hunt wouldn't buy a cheap scotch.
I found it on a kitchen shelf Saturday morning.
You know what that means?
It means that somebody brought it here Friday night.
And that somebody was here with her Friday night. Now, who was it?
I don't know. But I didn't want anybody to get any wrong idea about her. God rest her soul. Why, I put the bottle in the liquor cabinet. I done more than that. There were two glasses. I washed them out and cleaned off the bottle, too.
Destroying evidence, Bessie.
I don't care. I'll do anything to keep her name from being dragged through the mud.
Relax. Bessie, I'd like some ice in this setup. You mind?
I'll get it.
A couple of highball glasses. I'm expecting somebody.
More cops?
No, Shelby Carpenter. Let him in and then get the glasses.
The door's open, Lieutenant.
Oh, come in. I didn't expect you, Mrs. Treadwell. Oh, are you either, Mr. Lydecker?
Shelby's dropping me at the hairdresser later.
I only sent for you, Carpenter. I know.
So I thought I might as well come along.
Yes, my excuse is equally feeble. I just dropped in to inquire as to the state of your health, Lieutenant. Insipid, I trust?
About to have a drink. Oh, Bessie, two more glasses.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Bessie. What are you doing here?
I'm paid up for the week, and I'm working regardless.
Scotch, Slidecker?
Excellent.
Will this do? It's Black Pony.
I'm a guest here. It'll have to do.
Here's the ice and the glass.
You can skip mine, Lieutenant. I'm not much of a daytime drinker.
Oh? Well, that'll be all, Bessie. You can go home now.
But I... Yes, sir. I'll go.
Thank you.
I remember when Laura bought these glasses. She loved them. She loved all her things, so.
What are you going to do, sell them?
I suppose so, if I'm appointed administrator. I'll probably call in Corey.
Corey, the art dealer?
Yes, he can dispose of everything. It'll be less gruesome that way.
Not quite everything, Anne. There are two or three things that belong to me. That vase, for instance, the antique fire screen, and, of course, the clock.
That's quite a hunk of clock. You've got one just like it, haven't you? I noticed it in your apartment.
They were made 200 years ago by Corbe Fils. Two clocks exactly the same, created at the order of the Prince of Wales. I lent one to Laura.
Oh, really, Paul?
Yes, really. But the vase is the gem of my collection, and I intend to have it back. I can take it with me now.
Nothing's leaving here, Lydecker. Only you.
Oh, is that your quaint way of indicating dismissal?
Well, we're all leaving. I've got to get back to headquarters.
But I don't understand, Lieutenant. I thought you sent for me.
I did.
Well, don't you want to ask me any questions?
Nothing pressing.
Oh, I see.
Well, I bid you goodbye.
The vase, Mr. Lydecker. Put it down.
The what? Oh, of course. Just a slight touch of kleptomania.
Crane?
Yeah?
McPherson. I'm back. Upstairs in her apartment. How are you doing in the basement? Any calls come in this afternoon?
Not a thing.
I've just been looking the place over. I've only done it 40 times.
Anything interesting?
Everything's interesting. Especially that portrait.
A really beautiful doll, Lieutenant.
Yeah. I've read her letters, smelled her perfume, drank her scotch, gone through her wardrobe. Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Someone in the hall. Look, it's 7 o'clock. Alford will be along to relieve you. Make sure Alford keeps his ear on that phone.
Right.
Who is it?
Yes.
Coming, Lydecker. You just happened to be passing by.
And I noticed the lights on. By the way, have you sublet this apartment, McPherson? You're here often enough to pay rent.
Any objections?
Yes. Especially to your prying into Laura's letters. That bundle in your pocket, for instance.
No, these. They're yours. The best of the bunch. That's the trouble with getting murdered, Lydecker. It ruins your privacy.
And have detectives who buy portraits of murdered victims a claim to privacy? Lancaster Corey tells me you already put in a bid for Laura's portrait.
That's none of your business.
McPherson, did it ever strike you that you're acting very strangely? It's a wonder that you don't come here with roses and a box of drugstore candy. Have you been dreaming of Laura as your wife? By your side at the policeman's ball or in the bleachers? Or listening to the heroic saga of how you acquired a silver shin bone in a gun battle with a gangster? Yeah, I see you have.
Why don't you go home? I'm busy.
Well, perhaps we can come to terms now, huh? You want her portrait. Perfectly understandable. I want my possessions, my vase, my clock, my fire screen. Now, if you...
Get going.
You better watch out, Lieutenant. You'll end up in the psychiatric ward. I don't think they've ever had a patient who fell in love with a beautiful girl who died before he met her. Or did you meet her? Well, good night, McPherson.
Did you meet her? Ah, a very good, just as good as the movie. Very nice,
yep,
presentation.
Yep. We talked about the first time you saw it, Dale, and I teased everybody as I would talk about the first time I saw it. And the first time I saw it was as a play, and at the time my brother was working two part-time jobs up at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn. he got tickets in the theater there. I didn't even know what we were going to go see. And when I was aware of War, but hadn't seen the movie. So when I got to see the play, it was, let me tell you, the play is every bit as intriguing as the movie. And the way they
do marvelous. I'd love to see that.
The theater. Yeah, theater is no longer even in existence. I was just looking it up. And it's a larger-than-life theater now where they showcase a lot of movies, but also 4K films up on the screen. So the dramatic theater is gone, and it's just a movie theater now up at the Henry Ford.
Cool. Wow. But it would be great to see a live performance of this thing.
It was amazing. I had not seen the movie yet, but, you know, I have seen the movie since, and they're both great. They were both great.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. Well, everybody, raise your glasses if you already haven't to Mr. Vincent Price. This is his birthday. Of course, as I've said before, he also shares the birthday month, not the year, but the month, with the likes of the late Sir Peter Cushing and the late Sir Christopher Lee. They were all month of May men.
All this weekend birthdays. Today, yep. Of course, is Vince and Chris Lee, and I think yesterday was Pete.
Yes,
yeah.
Pete. Hey, Pete. Chris.
Yeah, well, we get along, so he let me call him.
Yeah, we're like that.
Yeah.
We're like that. We're like that. Yeah. the mystery men of mayhem, madness, and murder. What a good swell group of guys.
Yep. Did either of you get the opportunity to see, what was it, the old dark house or something? No, not the old dark house. It was Carradine was in it, Price, Cushing, and Lee.
Wasn't it the old dark house? No, not the House of the Long Shadows or?
Yeah, House of Long Dark Shadows or something like that.
Well, yes, it was. You had Desi Arnaz Jr. that was in there for some inexplicable reason. And
Inexplicable.
But yes.
He served no function, but they put him in.
I talk about what's the point, but sorry, Mr. Arnaz. he's still out there. You're still alive. More power to you. And I'm sure in all the things you did, that must have been a wonderful, rare treat. What I would not have given to have been able to find a way sneak onto that set.
Oh yeah,
I mean that was almost as much of a gift to him as Auto Man was, where he would turn into a car. He could turn himself into a car in Auto Man. Yeah, honest to God,
ended up on his car lot.
That's
a horror story.
Right there, yeah.
Terrible, sad ending.
Oh, dear. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Right next to the Pacer and the Yugo.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, God, those two cars.
And the Pacer.
Yeah, I thought the Pacer was kind of cool. The Yugo rusted out faster than anything else in Northeast Ohio.
Faster than a Chrysler from the 70s.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And believe me, those things, you can watch them disintegrate before your eyes. Especially in the winter.
You know, the cool thing was, at a time when it was like half the price, if not a third of the price of other cars out there. And as a car, Dale and I were talking beforehand, it's a car you actually could work on yourself. It came from Yugoslavia, which is why it was called the Yugo. And the biggest part of the problem of it, besides the rusting out, was you just couldn't get parts for it. But it's a car that actually you could work on yourself in your own garage, in your own backyard, whatever.
Frequently.
Yeah, you'd have to. You didn't have a choice. Yeah.
gosh.
Get a rough practice, you know.
These cars that belong to the museum of what was the point? The Edsel, the Pacer, the Yugo, and, of course, the explosive Pinto.
Yeah. Actually, the Edsel, and I did, again, one of my other trips to Henry Ford, I didn't see one there. It was actually the first completely automated car. It was, the front end was completely ugly. They designed it to look like nothing else out there. And they should have stolen a little bit more or something. It was ugly. But it was the first completely automated car with power brakes and power steering and power windows and everything else you can imagine in power was in the Edsel.
I know he named the car after his son, which, by the way,
That
is a lousy name to name a human being, let alone an automobile.
Let alone your own kid.
No kidding. Hello, my father is Henry Ford. He named me Edsel. I'm rich. That's pretty much all I've got going for me.
So the reason I shot up the bank, my name is Edsel, okay? Do I need to tell you any more? I think not. I think that tells the story, officer.
I think it does.
Yep. There you go. That speaks volumes, sir.
Sorry, kid. We're really sorry.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen it. Seen images of the inside of it. It looks nice and glossy and, you know, chromey. Cars back then did, but the exterior, you're quite right, that is a hideous looking vehicle. You know,
I like it. Nice getting away from us. We got 31 minutes of radio left. Let's get back to Laura, part three from Lux Radio Theater.
Roses and a box of drugstore candy. Have you been dreaming of Laura as your wife? Yes, I can see you have. You better watch out, Lieutenant. You'll wind up in the psychiatric ward. I don't think that they ever...
What's the matter with me? Maybe you can tell me. You, the girl in that portrait there. You're beautiful. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Somebody killed you. Why? Why? I could sit here and look at you all night. All night long, I could sit and...
Who's in there?
You. You.
What are you doing there?
You're alive.
If you don't get out once, I'll call the police.
You're Laura Hunt, aren't you? Aren't you?
I'm going to call the police.
But I am the police, you see. My badge, credentials, Mark McPherson.
What's all this about?
You don't know? Don't you know what's happened?
No.
Haven't you seen a paper? Where have you been?
In the country, I don't get a newspaper.
Haven't you got a radio?
It was broken. What?
Here. Look at these headlines. Sit down, Miss Hunt. I'm very glad to see you. On Friday night, somebody was murdered in this room.
What? What did you say?
Until you opened that door just now, we thought it was you. Now, do you have any idea who it could have been?
You don't know.
A girl died from shotgun wounds, close range. No, apparently we don't know. Who had a key to this apartment?
Nobody except my maid. When did you say it happened?
Friday night. You better take off that coat. It's dripping wet. When did it start raining?
Just a few minutes ago. It's teeming outside.
And it was raining Friday night, too, when that girl... Wait a minute. Raining. Now, come with me, Miss Hunt. Here. Into your room. I want you to please look in your closet.
I simply don't...
The closet, Miss Hunt. Here. Open it up. Do all these dresses belong to you?
Certainly they belong to me.
All of them? Everyone?
Are you out of your mind? Of course they... What's this one?
I don't know. You tell me.
Why, this dress isn't mine. It's hers. Diana Redfern. She had it on when she came for lunch on Friday.
Well...
But this dress wasn't in here when I left. It wasn't.
This Redfern girl. Is she a girl about your size?
Yes, she's a model. She works for us.
Yes, and she lives in Newark, but she hasn't been home. Her landlady said she'd gone to Philadelphia.
That's right. We have a branch office in Philadelphia. She had an assignment there. But she didn't go. It was postponed.
She got relatives in the city?
An aunt and uncle. Same name. They live in the village.
Thanks.
Where are you going?
Just to the telephone, Miss Hunt. I think Miss Redfern's aunt and uncle had better go to the morgue right away to make an identification. Right. So long, Inspector. Well, that's that, Miss Hunt.
They've located the Redfern.
Yes, we ought to know soon. Now, Miss Hunt, when you went to the country Friday, did you see anyone you knew on the train?
No.
Then what?
I got off at Norwalk. I keep a car in a private garage near the station. I drove to my house. It's about 18 miles.
What did you do in the country?
Worked in my garden.
Didn't leave your place in all that time?
I keep everything I need in the house. I went there expressly to be alone.
Mm-hmm. You were going to marry Shelby Carpenter this week.
Yes.
But you went away for a long weekend to be alone. You know Shelby Carpenter has a key to this apartment. Why didn't you tell me?
Because I know nothing of the sort. He hasn't.
How else did the Redfern girl get into the apartment? You knew she was in love with Carpenter.
I knew she was in love with him. She told me so herself. But I also know that she meant nothing to Shelby. I understand him better than you do.
She was found, and I'm convinced now it was Miss Redfern. She was found in your dressing gown.
What of it? You yourself told me it was raining Friday night. You yourself just saw her dress. It's full of wrinkles and rain spots.
Well, how did she get in here? Why? Who brought her here?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Now look, Miss Hunt, do you love this Carpenter fellow so much you'd risk your own safety to protect him? He must have brought her here.
You suspect me. You think I killed somebody in jealousy.
I'm trying to get at the truth. I'm sorry. Strictly routine. Well, I'll see you in the morning, Miss Hunt. Meanwhile, don't leave this apartment and don't use the telephone.
But I've got to use it. I've got to let my friends know I'm alive.
I'm sorry, but I must insist. If anything should happen to you now, I wouldn't like it.
All right, I promise.
There's one more thing. I know that you went away to make up your mind whether you'd marry Shelby Carpenter or not. What did you decide?
I decided not to marry him.
Well, I'll be seeing you in the morning, Miss Hunt. Good night.
Good night.
Alford?
Is that you, Mark?
Yeah.
Watch your step. It's pretty dark down here.
Anything come through those earphones?
Yeah. The morgue just called. Is the Redfern girl all right?
Well, it kind of balls things up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Hey, you seem pretty... Hey, wait a minute. She's dialing a number up there.
Give me those earphones.
Yeah.
Hello?
Shelby, this is Laura. I just...
Laura.
I must tell you...
Don't say anything on the telephone. Meet me right away in front of the office. Can you leave?
Right away.
Was that...
Yeah. Dames are always pulling a switch on you. You stay here, Alford. McCavity out front?
Yeah.
Get headquarters. Tell him to send another man down here right away. McCavity's going to tail the girl.
What about you?
I think I'll stick by Mr. Carpenter. I'll see you.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. In just a moment, our stars will be back with Act Three of Laura. Now, here's our Libby with her head in a turban, looking like a fortune teller.
I see the future of your stockings.
Well, here's a lady who would like to know how long her stockings will last. Suppose you tell her.
How long have you had them now?
They're new. I've worn them twice.
You will wear these stockings for 3 weeks more, until Monday, February 26th.
Why, how wonderful! How can you tell?
It's simple. According to a washing expert, 23 days is the average wearing cycle of rayon stockings. So if you've worn these 2 days already, you've still got 21 days or 3 weeks to go.
But my stockings never last that long. I must be way under average.
Oh, that's too bad. Perhaps I can help you. I see you in the evening washing stockings. I see cake soap and rubbing.
That's right. In this weather, stockings get all splattered up the back, and I have to rub to get the spots out.
Well, I think that's your trouble, then. You see, stockings are delicate. They just can't take harsh treatment like that. They need gentle care, lukewarm water, and gentle Lux, and no rubbing. If they are spotted, just take a few Lux flakes in your moistened fingers and work them in gently. Then squeeze the suds through the stocking, rinse well, and dry rayons for at least 24 hours. With proper care, I'm sure your new stockings will last much longer.
Yes, strain tests show that Lux stockings do last longer, actually twice as long, as those washed with strong soap or rubbed with cake soap. Twice the wear from every pair with Lux Care, That's worthwhile, isn't it? So stick to Lux for stockings. Now, Mr. Barrymore returns to the microphone.
After the play, you're invited to join us for a brief chat with our stars. Now here's Act Three of Laura, starring Dana Andrews as Mark, Jean Tierney as Laura, Vincent Price as Shelby Carpenter, and Otto Kruger as Lydica. For 3 hours, Detective Lieutenant McPherson's been following Shelby Carpenter. Now in the black hours of night, he stops his car near a lonely house 18 miles from Norwalk and makes his way carefully toward the front door. It's not quite shut. He peers through the crack for a moment and then walks in.
What?
What are you doing with that shotgun, Carpenter?
Well, I must admit this is somewhat embarrassing, Lieutenant.
Let me see that gun. Been fired recently.
Yes, I killed some rabbits with it.
When?
Oh, a while back. I don't know exactly. I gave the gun to Laura for protection.
You haven't borrowed it lately. You didn't just bring it back.
Well, you ought to know. You've been following me.
I realize the spot you're in. You brought Diana Redfern to Laura's apartment. You knew all along it was she who was murdered. Didn't you know Laura would come back any day and spill the whole thing? Or did you plan to kill her, too?
Oh, you're being fantastic, McPherson.
You took a bottle of Black Pony to her house Friday night.
I took it there over a week ago.
Bessie says Friday night.
I can't help what Bessie says.
Where's the key to Laura's apartment?
I haven't got one. I never had one.
Okay, you didn't bring the scotch there Friday night. You never had a key. How did you get in?
Well, I...
Come on, talk.
Talk? Oh, all right. You see, Laura kept an extra key in her office. I'd asked Diana to meet me in a restaurant. I wanted to have it out with her once and for all. You know, she thought... Well, she thought she was in love with me. She started to get hysterical. We had to leave. Well, I couldn't very well take her to her room in Newark, could I? Or to my hotel room. So we started to walk. It began to rain suddenly, and we got drenched. I thought of the key, and I stopped by the office to get it. We couldn't find a taxi, and so we walked back to Laura's apartment.
Yeah?
Diana went to Laura's bedroom. When she came out, she had on a dressing gown. Well, we talked, argued maybe, for a couple of hours, and then the doorbell rang.
Why didn't you go to the door?
Well, suppose one of Laura's friends had found me there.
What would they think of finding Diana there?
I told her to say that Laura had lent her the apartment. Anybody who knew Laura would have believed that.
Don't stop.
Well, I heard Diana open the door, and then there was an awful explosion. By the time I reached her, the door was shut again. Diana just lay there on the floor.
Didn't you go out to see who did it?
I was too confused, too horrified to do anything. The hallway was dark. I don't remember what I did. I knew I had to keep out of it and keep Laura out of it, too. The only thing on my mind was the safety of a person whose life was dearer to me than my own. Don't you understand that?
Did you think Laura had killed her? Did you?
I don't remember what I thought.
Do you think so now?
No.
On Saturday, when Detective Crane went to see you, you seemed sincerely shocked.
I was. I hadn't expected the police to mistake Diana's body for Laura's.
But your alibi was all ready. The concert. You knew the minute Laura got back to town, it wouldn't stick.
I couldn't think that far ahead. I was groping for some way to keep Laura's name out of it. I was heartbroken about Diana and panic-stricken about Laura.
Okay. And tonight you met Laura in front of her office. What did you talk about?
About what I just told you. So what are you turning on the radio for?
To see if it works. Why don't you tell her the truth? She sent you here to get rid of that gun.
She doesn't even know I came here. It was my own idea.
The radio works fine, doesn't it?
Why wouldn't it? I hoped it wouldn't.
All right. We're driving back to New York.
Well, am I under arrest?
I don't know. Just don't leave town. It would be a very foolish thing to do.
Oh, good morning, Lieutenant.
Good morning. You know, I have a terrific yen to call you Laura. Why don't you forget that lieutenant business and just call me Mark?
Because
especially since I brought you all these groceries. Breakfast. You didn't buy any food when you went out last night.
So you know.
Yeah. I can fix bacon and eggs. Can you make coffee? Oh, I spoke to Bessie. She'll be a little late. When I told her you were alive, she darn near passed out.
Yes, she phoned. You might have been a little more delicate about it. Suppose you set the table, but we'll have to wait a little while for the coffee.
I've asked Paul Lydecker to stop by.
Did you tell him about me that I'm alive?
No.
Why not? It's brutal.
I'm not doing it for laughs. Why did you break your promise last night?
Not to go out? Because I'll never be bound to do anything unless it's of my own free will.
the Redfern girl was in love with Carpenter, you admitted that.
I also told you he wasn't in love with her. Paul?
I don't know. Just sit still in here.
Hello, Lieutenant. Laura? Oh, good morning, darling.
Hello, dear.
Well, excuse me, Lieutenant. I'd like to kiss my fiancée good morning.
Oh, so it's on again.
So do I have to get a police permit?
So now who? Come in, Lydecker. The door's unlatched.
Lydecker, huh? Right on my heels.
Well, McPherson, have you thought over the deal I suggested? What about the portrait and the... Why? What?
Paul!
Laura.
Paul!
I'll be all right in a moment. Laura, what...
Not now, dear. Don't try to talk now.
Come on, I'll take him into the bedroom.
Just be quiet, Paul.
Yes. Yes.
Whoops. Got caught again as the real three ends of Laura on Lux Radio Theater.
Flip, 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 and, flip, 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 flip,
flip. Did someone faint? Oh, I just fainted, Bud.
Oopsie.
I know we don't have a whole lot of time here, but just to finish up a little more about Laura here. In 1999, Laura was selected for preservation by the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. The American Film Institute named it was one of the 10 best mystery films of all time, and it also appears on Roger Ebert's Greatest Movies series. So there you go. Mm.
I agree.
I just can't, there's movies like that. I can't believe they escaped my notice in my youth, you know, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very cool. This is a great American movie, and it turned into a pretty good radio adaptation. Was a very good stage play as well. So.
Yeah. A winner all round.
Yay, Laura! This long, last segment's kind of lengthy. Let's jump into it so we have time to talk about next weekend and other stuff. We'll be back after Laura, the conclusion.
How is he?
He'll be all right. He's lying down.
This is going just a little too far, McPherson. Your methods are vicious.
Must have been a terrible shock to him, seeing me. Poor darling.
Don't tell me you're in love with Lydecker, too.
Stop talking that way to Miss Hunt.
Laura, why do you cover up for a guy like Carpenter? What story did he tell you when you met him last night?
Don't answer him, darling.
Shut up. I've got enough on you, Carpenter, to arrest you right now.
Quick, McPherson, the handcuffs. Trundle him off to the hoosegow.
Oh.
I hope you'll forget my wee touch of angina, my dear. It's an old family custom. Did I interrupt a pinch, McPherson?
I've changed my mind for the moment.
Well, in that case, better order some food and liquor, Laura. People are coming to celebrate your return this afternoon. A cocktail party.
Who asked them?
I did. In the quiet of your boudoir just now. I called my man, and he's calling all our dear friends.
Why did you do that?
Well, perhaps our friends can weave all the loose ends into a noose. Eh, McPherson?
You shouldn't have gone to all that trouble, Mr. Lydecker. I'd already called them. Well, I'll run along now, Laura. Sorry about the breakfast. Some other time, maybe.
Shelby, come here.
What's the matter, darling? Your party's a huge success.
Shelby, tell me. I must know. Why did you go to the country last night?
Laura.
Well?
You don't know? I was afraid you wouldn't think of hiding that shotgun.
Shotgun.
The one I gave you. Oh, darling, you don't have to lie to me.
Well, what's going on here?
Oh, nothing at all, Ann.
In case you don't know it, that McPherson man hasn't taken his eyes off you.
I know.
Maybe it would be better if I, well, mingled with our guests.
Laura, McPherson suspects him, Shelby.
He suspects me, too.
Oh, don't be absurd. You could never have done a thing like that. Darling,
Yes.
Are you as interested in Lieutenant McPherson as he is in you?
Anne, I only met him last night.
Sometimes that's more than long enough. Anyway, he's better for you than Shelby. Anybody is. Shelby's better for me.
Why?
Because I can afford him. He's no good, but he's what I...
Wait a minute. He's coming. Mark.
Oh-ho. Mark, is it?
I'm sorry to break up your party, Laura.
But you haven't. You've been a model guest so far.
I'm not joking. Get on your things. I'm taking you to headquarters.
I thought I was going to get a cell and a denim dress. Is this your office?
Before they trot out that denim dress, I want to know why you've been holding out on me.
Have I been?
You told me the radio at your country place was broken.
It was.
Not last night.
I stopped in the village on my way back. I asked the local handyman to fix it.
And how did he get in?
With a key. The key I always leave under the flower pot on the porch.
All right, I'll accept that.
Why?
Because you're too intelligent to make up a story I could check so easily. The main thing I want to know is why you pulled that switch about Shelby Carpenter. You told me last night you decided not to marry him. But today it was on again. Why?
I changed my mind.
What went on between you and Carpenter when you met him last night? Or should I guess? He convinced you that if you broke your engagement now, people would think you believed that he killed Diana Redfern.
Yes, but now I know the real reason why he wanted to stay engaged. He thinks I did it. So do you.
Are you in love with him?
No, I don't know how I ever could have been.
Come on, Laura. You're going home.
But I thought I was...
That's what I wanted you to think. You and a few other people. I didn't even book you.
And all this was just some sort of a game.
I was 99% certain about you, but I just had to make sure of that 1% doubt.
Wasn't there an easier way to make sure?
You're smiling. You're not sore?
No, Mark. I'm not sore.
Go back to your party, if there's anything left of it.
And you?
I'm going to Lydecker's apartment. I'll drop by later on.
I'm glad they've all gone, Laura. It's been a long time since we've been together. Well, darling, what's the matter?
Nothing, Paul.
You're worried. Yes, McPherson. He's using you for something.
I don't think so.
I don't deny he's infatuated with you in some warped fashion, but he's incapable of any normal human relationship. He's been dealing too long with criminals. When you were unattainable, and he thought you were dead, that's when he wanted you most. Fell in love with your portrait.
He was glad when I came back, as if he were waiting for me.
You know what he calls women? Dames. A dame in Washington Heights once got a fox fur coat out of it. That's his very word.
That doesn't mean anything, Paul. He isn't like that.
Laura, my dear, you have one glaring weakness. With you, a lean, strong body is always the measure of a man. And you always get hurt.
No man is ever going to hurt me again. No, not even you.
I? Hurt you? Laura, look at me. You were a long time finding out about Shelby. But that's all over now. We'll be together again.
Wait, the door just opened.
Don't get up. It's only me.
Oh, haven't you heard of science's latest triumph, the doorbell?
I'm glad you're here, Lydecker. I've just been to your apartment.
Do you mind if I search your pockets?
I found a shotgun.
Oh.
But I wasted my time. It wasn't the gun that killed Diana Redfern.
First he tells you he thinks you're innocent, and then he proceeds to check up on you.
I never said you're innocent.
Me? I'm talking about Laura. My dear, this entire maneuver could be a trick to throw you off guard.
It could be. But it isn't.
I know. I believe you, Mark.
See, I'm beginning to get annoyed. Laura, it's the same obvious pattern. If McPherson weren't full of muscles and good looks, in a cheap sort of way, you'd see through him in a second.
Paul, I mean to be as kind about this as I know how. But you're the one following the same obvious pattern. First with that painter you thought was in love with me, then with Shelby, and now I suppose...
Laura, what are you saying?
That I don't think we should see each other again.
But, darling, you're not yourself.
Yes, I am. For the first time in ages, I know what I'm doing.
Very well. I hope you'll never regret what promises to be a disgustingly earthy relationship. Oh, listen to my broadcast in 10 minutes. I'm discussing the other great loves of history.
That was the most difficult thing I've had to do in my whole life.
Yeah, but I still haven't found it. I haven't found it.
What?
The gun that killed Diana Redfern.
What are you doing?
Taking a look at your clock. He's got one just like it, hasn't he?
Yes, but...
I wasn't alone just now in Lydecker's apartment. A guy named Sergeant Crane came with me. Crane's old man is a clockmaker. And while I wore myself out looking for a shotgun, all the sergeant did was drool about Lydecker's clock.
He said probably there's not another one like it in the world.
Obviously he was wrong.
Yeah, and he showed me something about that clock. A little feature with all clocks made by Corbeil Fils. Underneath, here, near the floor, is a little spring. You push the spring and the whole bottom compartment opens up, see? Like this.
But I never knew.
In the old days, I guess people used the compartment for a kind of safe. Today they use it for hiding other things, shotguns, for instance.
Clock.
Yep, this is it, Laura. I'm sure of it. And it was put here by the only man who knew about this clock, Paul Lydecker.
Oh, no.
Yeah. When the Redfern girl opened the door, this hallway was dark. Lydecker saw a girl, assumed it was you, and he fired. He figured if he couldn't have you for himself, he was going to make sure no one else did. He heard Carpenter, so he hid behind the stairway outside in the corridor. Carpenter was scared to death, and he got out as fast as he could. Then Lydecker slipped back in and tucked the gun away in the grandfather clock.
Oh, I've felt it ever since I came back. I'm the one to blame. Not for anything I did, but for what I didn't do. I should have stopped seeing Paul long ago. But I couldn't. I owed too much to him.
I can understand all that. But I can't understand why you tried so hard to protect Carpenter.
I was frantic you'd arrest him. I knew he wasn't guilty. But I knew Paul would do everything he could to incriminate him. It was his way of getting rid of Shelby, just as he got rid of every other man who might have meant something to me.
For a charming, intelligent girl, you've certainly surrounded yourself with a remarkable collection of dopes. Now, look, don't touch anything. I'm leaving the gun and the clock. I'll have it picked up in the morning.
You're going?
Yeah, I'm picking up Lydecker.
Mark.
I've got to. You know that. Try and get some sleep, will you?
Sleep? Well, maybe I can. I'll read a book, listen to the radio. Will you call me later?
Sure. Try and forget all this. It's just a bad dream. Good night, Laura.
Good night, Mark. Good night. And be careful, please.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, with his final word for this evening, Mr. Paul Lydecker.
As history has proved, love is eternal. The strongest motivation for man's actions throughout centuries. Love is stronger than life. It reaches beyond the dark shadows of death. May I remind you of some favorite lines of mine from Dowson's poem? They are not long, the weeping and the laughter and love and desire and hate. I think they have no portion in us after we pass the gate. They are not long, days of wine and roses, out of a misty dream. Our path emerges for a while, then closes within a dream.
That's the way
it
is,
Laura. You've heard
the
voice of Paul Lydecker by electrical transcription. This is the...
There is a final irony to all of this, Laura. You know how I despise melodrama, and yet here I am, a gun in my hand, about to kill you.
Oh, you've taken one life, isn't that enough?
The best part of myself, that's what you are, Laura. Do you think I'm going to leave you to the vulgar pawings of a second-rate policeman who thinks you're a dame?
He'll find you, Paul, you know he will.
Will he? Don't you overestimate the man who thought I left a few moments ago. And all I did was wait in the hall, Laura. And then I let myself in again with the key I've always had. I'm not going to lose you, Laura.
Open the door.
Don't move, Laura.
He didn't leave. He's somewhere in this building. Laura, are you all right?
He'll find us together, darling. As always we should have been. As always we will be.
No, Paul, no!
Turn your face, darling. Please, turn your face. I...
Sorry, Miss Hunter, I had to do it. I better let the boss in before he busts down your door. Laura.
It's all right, Mark.
Get him through the window, Lieutenant, from the fire escape. I'll call headquarters.
Fine detective. A fine detective I am.
Laura.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, my love.
It's all right, darling. It's all right. The bad dream is over.
Our stars will be back for their curtain calls in a moment. The war is far from over. Now is no time to relax.
President says Army needs 18,000 nurses.
Congress discusses drafting women, 18 to 50.
This is the crucial year of the war, and every woman, like every man, must do her part. If you want to bring your son, your husband, the boy down the street home sooner, Do every single thing you can to help now. Even if you can't take a war job or be a nurse, you can still help by saving every drop of used fat. Your used kitchen fats make the medicines our nurses need for our wounded men and the raw materials for synthetic rubber life rafts and airplane tires. The American Fat Salvage Committee says,
fat salvage can no longer be regarded as a volunteer service. It is a serious wartime obligation that must not be neglected until every Jap is driven back to Tokyo and the South Pacific Islands again become exporters of commercial fats and oils.
Yes, now the kitchens of America must help supply the fats we used to get from lands the Japs still hold. Save the fat from your broiler and frying pans. Skim it off the tops of soups and stews and gravies. Melt down table scraps and suet. Your butcher will give you 4 cents and 2 red ration tokens for every pound you turn in. Save every drop every day until J-Day, the day the Japs are licked. Now, back to Mr. Barrymore and our stars.
Well, now that we've solved tonight's baffling crime, with the help of Jean Tierney, Dana Andrews, Vincent Price, and Otto Kruger, we invite our stars to the footlights for their curtain call. And I might add that for Dana, this is the first appearance on our stage.
First for me, too, Mr. Paramore.
For you, too, Jean? Well, with Van Johnson here on our 10th anniversary show, the Lux Radio Theater's had a pretty good season for new stars.
I hear you're making a picture with Van Johnson, Mr. Barrymore.
Yeah, that's right, Vincent. Between Two Women. That Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Well, I'll tell you a secret about Dana. He's going romantic on us in his next picture.
What picture's that, Dana? The Technicolor, Vincent, for 20th Century Fox. State Fair.
Who's in it with you?
Well, the largest group in the cast is 54 prize Hampshire hogs.
Hogs? Hogs?
Now, let me get this straight, Dana. You're playing a romantic role?
Uh-huh.
And you know, one of those pigs weighs 880 pounds.
It's undoubtedly the biggest ham in the picture.
Oh.
I can see now why there's a bacon shortage. All the hogs are going to pictures.
Well, Dana, you sent those hogs a good example in acting, and we look forward to producing State Fair in this theater someday.
What are you going to have on Lux for next week, Mr. Barrymore?
For next Monday night, we have from Paramount Studios a play and stars that hundreds of our listeners have requested, For Whom the Bell Tolls. With Katina Paxinu, Akeem Tamirov, Mikhail Razumi, and Gary Cooper and Ingrid Bergman. I can guess by the reaction in our studio audience that it's a play you've all been looking forward to. And I don't wonder. Based on the novel by Ernest Hemingway, it's one of the great motion pictures of our time, with 5 great stars in their original screen roles.
Sounds like a wonderful evening, Mr. Barrymore. Good night.
Good night. I hope to meet again. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Ingrid Bergman, Gary Cooper, Katina Paxinu, Akeem Tamirov, and Mikhail Razumi in For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Laura was presented through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, producers of A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Mr. Barrymore can be heard on his own program, The Mayor of the Town, every Saturday night over the same network. Vincent Price is currently working on the 20th Century Fox production, Dragon Wick. Otto Kruger will soon be seen in Samuel Goldwyn's Technicolor picture, Wonder Man. Heard in tonight's play were Lois Corbett, Leo Cleary, Noreen Gamil, Dwayne Thompson, Charles Seal, and Howard McNear. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This program is broadcast to our fighting forces overseas through cooperation with the Armed Forces Radio Service. Our Lux Radio Theater production of Laura, starring Dana Andrews, Jean Tierney, Vincent Price, and Otto Kruger, has come to you with the good wishes of the makers of Lux Flakes, the tissue-thin soap used by smart housewives everywhere. This is your announcer, John M. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear For Whom the Bell Tolls with Gary Cooper and Ingrid Bergman, Katina Paxinu, Akeem Tamirov, and Mikhail Razumni.
There's less work in my cooking. No guesswork in my cooking. My best work is my cooking, since I have switched to Spry.
Let new Easy Bake Spry and Spry's amazing shortcut recipes help you serve more delicious meals with far less work. For lighter, better-tasting cakes, tender, flaky pastry, crispy, digestible fried foods, get S-P-R-Y Spry.
And be sure to listen in next Monday night to the Lux Radio Theater presentation of For Whom the Bell Tolls, with Gary Cooper, Ingrid Bergman, Katina Paxinou, Akim Tamirov, and Mikhail Rasumi. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mikhail went on to do set up a Navy thing. Yeah,
I don't know what you do, but I'm feeling rather spry. I'm feeling rather spry. I sprayed myself accidentally, so I'm now rather spry.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I feel the need to lux my hands in some dishwashing soap.
That's right. Yep. No more dishpan hands.
Being around us does that to a person. The constant need to wash one's hands. It's like an obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh, yes. Well, in the age of the COVID thing, ooh, I said the C word. Yes, remember, wash your hands still, everybody. C-word. Wash your hands. C word, yes.
Yeah. Go back to the days of BC before COVID, yes.
I never thought the day would come when you would be the one to use the C word on Erie House.
I know. Anyway. Oh, such language.
If anyone would not, I would think. But there we have it. There we have it.
Well, there you go. What's next week on Erie House Radio?
We have answered your call, good old Bob. We got a special weekend you had recommended, so we're doing it. Yeah, it's going to be science gone wrong. We see it every day. But they had it back then, too, so it's old-time radio. We're going to have suspense, the shadow, quiet, please. That'll be on Friday night, and then Saturday, more bad science with lights out. And, ooh, it's a Lights Out I haven't heard before. Cool. And Lights Out Theater 5. Lights Out and Theater 5, yes. That's Saturday with Bad Science. So there you go, good old Bob.
Ooh.
I'm scheming with Dave now for another interesting
tonight, theme. Tonight, right after our broadcast, we do have, you can flip over to them at Twitch Place and catch a brand new rerun of Gara the Ghoul, Horrible Horror starring Gara the Ghoul.
Yes.
And never before seen because Chickasaw Productions has kind of cleaned it up and touched it up and done some fun things with it. So even if you've seen it, you still haven't seen it. There you go.
Yep. Okay. Lots of cool things coming up in the future. Let George do it. CBS Radio Mystery Theater will be back in a couple of weeks. The Goon Show will be back soon. So there are so many good things to look forward to. Who knows? We might even have the Flintstones on here. You never know.
Oh, wow.
Could be.
Oh, yabba dabba doo.
Maybe.
Oh, another naughty.
You want to hang around for the after party or tune in for secret Erie House stuff.
can I go?
Yeah, you can come.
Can I go?
You're invited.
Oh, cool.
You're invited. All are welcome. All are welcome.
All are welcome.
Well, thanks again, everyone. Oh, hey, and if we you want to have a nice Memorial Day, think kindly of them what gave up their lives for us to have what freedoms we have.
Yes,
you're here.
Fair. Absolutely.
Any other way.
Yep, and another happy birthday to Vincent Price, the ghoul, the gourmet, the guy.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Well done.
There's no one left but me and him.
And her birthday,
when
boy.
Next we meet in Frankenstone.
Happy birthday, Vincent.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it? Ha 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 ha!
Don't let the door get you.
Where the good Lord split.
Ow!
But anyway.
Oh, man.
Oh.
I got my foot out of that door thing, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Ooh, ouch. That's an ouchie.
So we were talking, CW, Dave and I. I thought, why couldn't we do a Flintstones weekend?
Ooh.
After all, there's lots of radio with Alan Reed, Mel Blanc, Dee Benaderet, and Dave tells me there's some Jean Vanderpil out there.
Yeah, she was mostly, you know, secondary characters, but she did a lot of radio. I think the Flintstones was one of the first times she was a major character.
Yeah. She knocked around a bit, and I was telling Dave, I had read that she regretted not taking a piece of the pie like some of the other voice people. She took, like, a flat rate, and she really got shorted.
That just must hurt. That just hurts, even thinking about it. That's painful.
Oh, that show just did so well. Most successful cartoon until The Simpsons.
Until The Simpsons, yeah.
They're still number two, though. Flintstones is still number two. How about that?
Wow. Incredible. I think a Flintstone regalia would be outstanding.
Well, just kicking that around. Well,
and
I thought, you know.
Alan Reed did a lot of stuff, and a lot of his things were secondary characters. Mel Blanc, of course, had his own radio show. We could focus on one of those. Dee Benaderet was all over the place.
Or you've got a bunch of Jack Benny to choose from with Mel Blanc, too.
Well, I would think what we could do is pull some Alan Reed and some Mel Blanc clips, as well as, you know, some full shows.
Oh, absolutely, and I can get a bunch of sound bites.
Yep, I mean, Mel Blanc was everything from Porky Pig to Sad Sack to all the different characters that he portrayed on his own show. He was just all over the place.
Yeah, but we'd want to be real careful with Private Snafu.
Yes.
Some of that stuff is a little adult.
Well,
even
I had to
the
keep
word
the soldiers
snafu.
Interested.
Yeah, true. Situation normal, all fouled up. I'm pretty sure that's what it means.
Yes.
Pretty sure that's what it
means.
Yes,
with a different word in there. With a different word in there, yeah.
Oh, there is? Yeah, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Those are cute cartoons, though. A very interesting insight into that period. All the war cartoons were.
And the Flintstones, you know, that's where the Simpsons probably got the idea to do the parodies and get the guest stars for their show. I mean, Flintstones had Stoney Curtis. They had the Rolling Bowlers.
Yeah.
They had Hoagie Cum.
And Mark Rock. And Mark Rock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Montgomery and Dick York.
Oh, yes. They did that.
Yeah.
They did a parody of Peter Gunn, Perry Gunnite.
Yep. Other character voices. Dawes Butler played Barney Rubble in season two. In episodes 1, 2, 5, 6, and 9 only. Probably when Mel Blanc had his really horrifying auto accident. He did many episodes. You'll hear Barney's voice change. He was laying on his back in the hospital recording.
Right.
What?
Well, not only that,
in the hospital.
Yeah.
Dawes Butler, he was also the original Fred Flintstone. I guess the Barbera came to Alan Reed and said, you know, we want you to come up with voices. Now, you don't want to come up with a voice. You want a regular voice. You want a voice that doesn't sound fake. And so, in a sense, they said, okay, thanks for your time. And they filmed the first four with Alan Reed and decided that with Dawes Butler, and they decided Alan Reed was right. They really wanted somebody who really sounded real.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was your everyman.
And so those four, I think one of them has been floated around all the time as the pilot for the Flintstones, although they actually did film four of them before Hanna-Barbera changed her mind and went back to Alan Reed and had him do it essentially with his real voice.
Yep. And then Don Messick played Bam Bam. Also Hoppy, the Hopperoo.
Yes.
The kid Arnold.
Did, yeah.
That annoying kid Arnold.
Cool.
And Gobby Gruesome when the Gruesomes were on. June Foray was Granny Hatrock in the Bedrock Hillbillies. So June Foray snuck in there. Howard McNear was as a doctor in three different episodes. Howard Morris was Weirdly Gruesome, Schneider, Jethro Hatrock, Slab Hatrock, and Percy, whatever Percy is. A lot of good voice people were on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Howard Morris
definitely
did so well with Sid Caesar for so many years. And then everybody thinks he was on half the episodes of the Andy Griffith Show. He only was on like six or eight episodes.
Yeah.
But those
but
episodes
that
are so popular. Yep.
Ernest T. Bass. Oh, my gosh. He just drove me crazy.
Yep. Those episodes are so popular, everybody thinks that he was in, like, you know, so many episodes, but he was only in, like, six to maybe eight episodes.
He'd been playing characters for a long time. I saw him, I think I was on even a Milton Berle or something. He was so young.
Yeah. Sid Caesar, yeah.
Maybe it was
he might have been a Milton Berle, too.
Sid Caesar and Carl
it could have been Sid.
That trio they did, the haircuts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and we can't forget
yeah.
Harvey Korman as the Great Gazoo.
The Great Gazoo,
oh, of course.
Yes.
Oh, the Great Gazoo, wow.
The Great Harvey Korman. He's funny. I just picked him and Tim Conway. Put those two together.
Yeah.
And you will not get through the script.
Harvey Korman could not keep a straight face working against Tim Conway.
Yeah. Those two were classic on everything they did, especially the Carol Burnett show.
The one that I remember most vividly, besides Carol Burnett doing her Miss Starlet O'Hara with the curtain rod as
yeah.
the famous dress, is
yes.
when they did a takeoff on Harvey Korman with Tim Conway and Vicki Lawrence when they did that skit Jowls, the takeoff on Jaws.
Jowls. Good stuff.
No kidding. That was just absolutely hilarious.
Now, my thing with the Flintstones was probably watching it more after school. It ran a lot on Channel 43 locally for us.
Yeah.
I want to say in the late 60s, but probably more like the early and up into the mid-70s. It was a staple, I think, on Channel 43 for a long time. They had like an hour spot
yeah.
there in a couple episodes.
Oh, yes, and you haven't
heard
Sting's rendition of the Flintstones. You ever hear Sting sing the Flintstones theme song?
Oh, God,
it's
no,
older.
I haven't. And I don't wish
my God.
To.
You got it. It's good. It's
really?
Good. It's not a parody. He's really good at it. He's strumming on the guitar is being strummed. Flintstones. He's
oh, God.
Good at it.
I think the Ramones might have done the Spider-Man theme.
Oh, yeah, they did Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. The Ramones. Awesome. But Hanna-Barbera, they just paved the way for cartoons, man. Between the Flintstones and things like Top Cat and other really popular cartoons.
Well,
I think the other cartoon industry started following them with the animation.
Yeah, before that, Dale, they had, you know, the Yogi Bear and the Wally Gator and the Megilla Gorilla. All those were Hanna-Barbera. Adam Ant?
They ran over the place. Yep.
And then they did a Genie, a cartoon of Genie.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yep. She had a friend, Genie, didn't she? Like Babu or something like that.
Yes. Oh,
yeah,
Babu.
Something like that. Yeah.
You've done it again,
something
Babu.
Like that.
And I think the voice of Babu, wasn't that one of the guys who was
I think it was Joe Derita, maybe.
Yes.
Was it Joe Derita or Joe Besser, maybe? One of the two. It might have been Joe Besser. Here, well.
But it was definitely the voice by one of the Stooges. Not Larry Fine and not Mo, the other one. Yeah, exactly.
We'll find out.
But, yeah. Mm. But they had their hand in a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Babu was Joe Besser, not Joe Derita. It was Joe Besser.
Joe Besser, yeah.
Besser.
Good memory there, CW. That's...
Oh, thank you. Yes, I love my cartoons. I love my anime. Don't get me started about Dragon Ball Z.
my daughter would be able to carry that conversation. I'm not an anime person. She likes a lot of the Japanese anime.
Yeah, I love that. When they had that started on Adult Swim, I was always there. Paranoid Agent, Inuyasha, again, Dragon Ball Z. I never got into Pokemon.
She was into Bleach, something called Bleach.
Oh, yes, Bleach. Oh, my freaking God. That was so... don't get me started. I'll be here till the end of time. Oh, that was good. Oh, wow. That was great. Bleach was great. I mentioned Paranoid Agent, Inuyasha. What was another one? Naruto was okay. Never had that one, but Dragon Ball Z and all the offshoots of Dragon Ball. I really enjoyed that one. Card Captors. Never got into that too much. Digimon, not too much of that as well. But yeah, there was just a host of other things that were on there. yes.
And I remember Sunday mornings we would have some of the early anime, like your Astro Boy and Kimba the White Lion, Tobor the Ape Man. Did you ever get to enjoy any Tobor the Ape Man? Got a big ape on his chest.
They did retro
like a robot
things
dude
on Adult Swim. Yeah, Gigantor.
Gigantor.
That was pretty much the theme song. Gigantor, his power is at your command. Gigantor. Sorry, that just pretty much bored me. Just never got into that one. The earlier ones that I got into were Star Blazers, searching for a distant star, heading off to Ishkandar, leaving all we love behind. Who knows what dangers we'll find? We must be strong and brave. Our home we've got to save. If we don't, in just 1 year, Mother Earth will disappear. Something to that effect. You know, I wasn't that into it, but I can sing theme song. I almost got to the point where I could sing it in Japanese, but not that I was that much into it.
Not a whole lot.
Not much. Very good stuff. Very good stuff. Sometimes the live action, some of them had live action, but the live actions were really kind of just never clicked. Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon was great. Sorry, it was great.
Is that the one with the little girl who's like in a sailor outfit or something?
Yeah. On behalf of the moon, I will punish you. Sailor Mars, Sailor Mercury, Sailor Venus, Sailor Jupiter. And, of course, you had Sailor Moon. And then they had this irritating little girl who was akin to the Oliver in the Brady Bunch, which really put me off.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Sailor Moon was great.
Yep. Come a long, long way since...
most definitely. Cowboy the dinosaur. Bebop, that was the one. No kidding. Cowboy Bebop, that was amazing. And they tried to do a live action of it. That didn't last a series. I caught a few episodes of it, and it was just not enough, and it was too late. Just too much time had passed. It was a good try, but it just didn't catch on. Cowboy Bebop, if you ever can take a moment to...
I haven't sat down and actually watched any. I've seen some ads for it and the intro to it. It looked kind of interesting. I just never took the time to...
It great, great opening theme song. And the closing theme is really nice, too. It's called The Real Folk Blues.
Hmm.
Now, that's a song that I almost started learning Japanese for.
Ah, konnichiwa.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Or domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. That's about it.
Yep. That's it.
That's my Japanese right there. I know more Latin than Japanese.
But, gentlemen, it has been fabulous celebrating Mr. Vincent Price's birthday with you. And even though Mr. Price is only here in spirit, I say to him again, many happy returns of the day, Vincent.
Indeed,
thank you so much,
sir. Thanks for everything you've made and created. Good stuff.
Absolutely. You made us enjoy art, movies,
food.
Food. Yes.
All right, kids.
Cooking. Yep.
I got a collie to play with.
Oh, in that case, Mr. Durante, the dog is calling, so we need you on the stage right now.
Hug a collie today.
Good night. It's time to say good night.
You well, Gar?
Good night.
Hi, Dad.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Hurry, Bobot,
we the same.
No pickle, no goat.
Pickle, goat.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Mrs. Calabash?
Wherever
you are.
Do you mind turning off the radio?